This is the LZR Project, an episodic story series by David N. Alderman. The LZR Project takes place within David's Expired Reality universe and serves as a prequel to the main novels in his Expired Reality series. The LZR Project is produced by the Crossover Alliance Publishing Company. Episode number 4. The date is Thursday, April 8th, 1998. David Corbin took the bulletproof vest off the armory wall, his tired eyes finding it hard to stay open at such an early hour of the morning. He slipped the vest over his chest and tightened the straps on each side. The protection felt good and put his mind at ease about what he was about to do. Planning on getting into some trouble? Startled, David turned and caught his breath when he saw Ridley Grant in the doorway. He opened his mouth to speak, but knew Ridley wouldn't buy whatever lame excuse he could come up with. She stepped into the room, the blue lighting adding a soft glow to her slender figure. Instead of the black blazer and skirt he had last seen her in, she wore black cargo pants and a white t-shirt and black denim jacket. "You're here early, too early for anyone else to know what you're going to do." "Not you, apparently," David said, grabbing a pulse pistol from the weapon rack. He made sure the gun was set to stun and then slid it into the holster at his side. As was second nature to him by now, he felt his back right pocket for the familiar curvature of his wooden boomerang. "I'm always up early. I don't usually sleep well." Her gaze drifted. "Not recently, anyway." "Because of your brother?" David asked. Her eyes met his. It would take someone who has lost someone close to them, or been responsible for the death of an innocent, to recognize another who carries the same burden. "My brother was very close to me." "You did what you could," David replied. "It was his choice to get involved in your affairs." Ridley stared at him, watching as he double-checked his cell phone battery before sliding the phone into his pocket. "There's no point skirting the issue, is there?" he finally said. "I'll just be honest with you, not because I have to be, but because I trust you." "Why do you trust me? We just met the other day. I'm your superior, technically. What makes you think I won't order you to put the vest and gun back and go home?" David stood in front of her, a warm grin on his face. "I trust you because you appreciate the pursuit of truth. You went undercover to take down Lysalis's most dangerous gang, and your brother died in the process. You know what the sacrifice for truth is." She crossed her arms over her chest and smirked. "Is that what you're going to do? Pursue truth?" "I have to investigate Scarlet Rogue's claims that the Morvane Health Institute is more than it seems." "I could tell you that much without even going there," she said. "The Institute has been on our police hot sheet for some time now. There's always rumors flying around the precinct that the place is an illegal lab where experiments are run on people. As far as I've been able to tell, they're all rumors." "Has anyone investigated the place before?" he asked. "Can't. Legal red tape. The place is owned by the Inera government, but run by a third-party company called RTI. Anytime an officer got the bright idea to go down there and satisfy their curiosity, mountains of paperwork would show up on my captain's desk, and we'd all get an ass-chewing for weeks." "I don't like paperwork," David said. "Neither do I. But I have to check it out." "You trust Scarlet? Didn't she try to kill you?" "Yes, long ago." "Still, you're either going to accept the fact that I'm going, or you're going to have to call Roger up and report me." "There's no need to make an ultimatum with me, David." Ridley stepped toward the wall and pulled a vest off the hook. She slipped off her jacket, put the vest on over her t-shirt, and put her jacket back on. Then she patted her right side where a holster with a pistol hung. "I know how you work. I trust your instinct. And if your instinct is telling you to go to a Morvane Health Institute, then you'll need another set of hands to keep you out of trouble." David and Ridley took the elevator to the parking garage underneath the Bank of Lysalis building. From there, Ridley drove one of the project's SUVs to the Tristan District on the outskirts of Lysalis. David had only been to the Tristan District twice, once to chase a criminal through the gloomy countryside. The pursuit had given him his first view of Tristan during the day, rolling hills covered in charred grass, fields of leafless trees huddled together like cold skeletons, and dead animals, lots of dead animals, always found on the side of the road or scattered under rows of dead trees. The second time David had traveled to the Tristan district was with Jennifer Glass, Mr. Big's niece, and an orphan girl David had fallen in love with before she left him a note and ran off to Crystal City to find her real parents. David and Jennifer had come to the district looking for time away from the rest of the Laser Blades, but had only found the death and decay. Ridley pulled the vehicle up to a long, one-story building that resembled a school more than it did a psychological facility. The brick building stood in the middle of hundreds of acres of open land, void of trees, void of life. No tall wall surrounded the property. No imposing black iron fence acted as a sentry to their visit. Ridley drove down a dirt path that circled around a stone fountain carved in the shape of Arcturus the Beautiful, a woman found in Inatia's constellations. Her stone body, lit up in blue and green lights, had been decorated with an intricately carved wedding dress, the hem of which flowed into the basin of the fountain. Ridley stopped the car in front of the building. "Strange, they have no security," she said, "especially with all of the red tape one has to get through to visit this place. Then again, I found that the more welcoming a place looks, the darker its secrets turn out to be." David stepped out of the vehicle, taking comfort in his bulletproof vest. The pulse pistol gave him some satisfaction, not nearly as much as his boomerang, but nothing made him feel more at ease than having Ridley, a seasoned officer, by his side. The air felt thick and cold at the early morning hour. Darkness still blanketed the sky and the scent of rot hung around them. "Let's be extra careful," Ridley said. "I'm not sure what to expect in here." "Neither do I. Scarlet's not exactly the most trustworthy person." "You think this could be a trap?" she asked. David walked up the two steps it took to get to the porch and then stopped in front of the glass doors. Heavy tint made it impossible to see what was inside the building. "I don't think she was lying," he said. "Scarlet tried to kill me at one point in the past, but I believe she was coerced into doing it." "Duress?" "Possibly. I have no way of proving it. Not yet." "Do you think she still has feelings for you?" "Doesn't matter, really." David grabbed the door handle. "She's not the type of person to do something completely out of spite. Whether she has feelings for me or not, she wouldn't lie about this place. There's no reason for it." Ridley drew her pistol and held it by the side of the door while David pulled the door open. Inside, a darkened lobby greeted them. A single fluorescent light illuminated the seat an orderly in a white gown sat in. She looked up after a few seconds of hesitation, not at all surprised by the company. Her eyes looked hollow and empty in the dim lighting, and her hair, a cluster of gray strands, set parts of her bald scalp exposed under the lighting. David and Ridley approached the counter. Dark stains covered the laminate, and David couldn't tell if they were blood, soda, or something else entirely. He kept his arms off the counter but scanned the room. He was sure the stained walls of the lobby, void of pictures or propaganda, hid mold and mildew that he could taste in the foul air. A solid white door stood to his right, no doubt leading to the rooms of the Institute. Unkempt chairs had been set in a row of six against the wall to the left of the counter, most of which had scratches and multicolored stains in their plastic surfaces. The orderly suddenly broke out into a coughing spell, spitting up chunks of dark matter into a trash can she kept underneath the counter. After wiping her lips, she tilted her head up at David and Ridley and gave a half-hearted smile, revealing nicotine-stained teeth. "What can I do for you two?" "I'm Officer Ridley Grant, and this is David Corbin. We're with the LZR Project. We'd like to talk to Scarlet Rogue." The orderly refused to answer, instead choosing to stare at Ridley with her hollow eyes. "We're here to see Scarlet Rogue," David said. "I heard you the first time," the orderly grunted. "Scarlet isn't here any longer." She broke into another coughing fit, leaning over in her chair as she spit up more phlegm into her trash can. "She is," David insisted. "I want to speak to her." The woman set her trash can underneath the counter and wiped her lips on her sleeve before looking up at David with a dark gaze. "You calling me a liar, boy?" Ridley leaned over the counter. David cringed when he saw her hands touch the unknown stains on the laminate. "He's not a boy. He's David Corbin." "Who?" Ridley tapped the barrel of her pistol against the surface of the counter. "Scarlet, where is she?" The orderly glanced nervously at the gun, then at Ridley. She reached her hand across her desk, and suddenly the large white door to David's right popped open with a loud click. "See for yourself. Scarlet is no longer here." David looked to Ridley, who motioned for them to enter the innards of the Institute. He started toward the door. As soon as he crossed the threshold into the main hallway, the door slammed shut behind him and clicked loudly in place. "Hey!" He pulled the handle and banged on the door with his fists, but he knew it was to no avail. He had been tricked, and knowing this, David turned toward the hallway and braced himself. He had to go in and hope he could find Scarlet before Ridley managed to get the orderly to open the door for her. As much as David trusted Ridley, his desire was to find Scarlet and have a discussion with her by himself. Something was off about the whole mission he and his team had embarked on yesterday, and it made him cautious as to who he exposed Scarlet to. He started down the hallway, his right hand resting on the boomerang in his back pocket. The smell of the corridor, a mixture of intense body odor and vomit, made him want to throw up. Brown and red stains crawled across the yellow tile flooring and up the yellow walls. Rooms came up along the sides of the hallway, each one blocked by locked doors with small covered windows in them. Screams and moans echoed through the narrow corridor, but David pressed forward, his determination focused on finding Scarlet. If this is a trap, he told himself, they'll probably try to draw me into the center of the facility. That's probably where they're keeping her. Suddenly, a door to his right clicked open. David took a few steps back and peered into the room, his hand settled firmly on his boomerang. The gray walls inside the room were covered in blue swirls and various drawings of mountains, snowflakes, and lightning bolts, all drawn in chalk. In the center of the room, her wrists and ankles tied to a wooden chair with barbed wire, sat Scarlet Rogue, her black and purple hair draped in front of her face. Scarlet, David whispered, slowly slipping his boomerang from his back pocket as he eased into the room. He held the weighted object in his right hand, the imbalance giving him a sense of comfort. He approached the chair, half expecting the door to slam shut behind him. A few seconds later, it did. He reached down and moved her hair away from her face, revealing bloody gashes and broken railroad tracks of stitches all around her face. Scarlet's swollen eyes opened, and for the first time David felt disgusted with a human being's appearance. A lone piece of blue chalk hid behind her left ear. The fingers of her right hand were mangled, the bone protruding out of her forefinger and pinky. Her legs looked as if they had been whipped with barbed wire, and her white gown, which came to her knees, showcased vibrant splotches of fresh blood. David slid his boomerang back into his pocket and knelt before her, examining her face, even daring to touch her wounded hand. Gently, passionately. What did they do to you? She cracked a grin, and when she did, her bottom lip squeezed out drops of blood. I knew. She swallowed hard, nearly choking on her own saliva. I knew you'd come for me. What happened? Say my name. Scarlet. Scarlet Rogue. Say it again. David stood to his feet, pushing down the rage that was quickly growing within him. Scarlet Rogue. Can you get me out of here? I don't know. What's going on here, Scarlet? She licked her lip, wiping the blood up on her tongue as David listened to a shrill scream echo from a room beyond theirs. I don't remember. He glanced around the walls, taking in the strange markings. What are these symbols, Scarlet? What do they mean? Did you do these? Scarlet lifted her head and craned her neck to see what he was referring to. Yes, I did that. She swallowed hard again, this time gagging on her saliva. She coughed up blood, spitting it on the floor near David's feet before continuing. Before I escaped, fled, flew, I don't know what it all means. It was in my head and I had to get it out. Had to get it out. David pulled out his cell phone and began taking pictures of the walls, careful to get each and every single symbol that Scarlet had inscribed. He glanced at his phone, not at all surprised to see that he had no signal. How are you going to get us out of here, David? I need to get out of here. David, you're my hero. I don't know, he replied, examining the ceiling. A vent hid in the corner, but he had nothing except Scarlet's chair to stand on. He began untying her wrists from the chair. Don't do anything stupid, Scarlet. I'm trying to help you. Once her wrists were free, Scarlet licked her fingers and rubbed the blood from the barbed wire wounds. I know, David. I know you believe me. I didn't want to kill you. I never wanted to hurt you, you know. He made me. The man in black. The man in black made me do it. Mercenary. David untied her ankles and then helped her to her feet. She couldn't stand on her own, not in the condition she was in, so he sat her down in the corner of the room and then took her chair and set it up underneath the vent. Before he could step up on the chair, the door to Scarlet's room opened and two men stepped inside, one in a security uniform, the other in white scrubs. The guard drew his pistol and pointed it at David. What are you doing here? He was a big guy, too big for David to take down himself. The guy in the scrubs would have been easy enough to subdue, though. What happened to her? David asked, stepping in front of Scarlet. She's nearly dead. She tried to escape, the guard answered before lowering his weapon. It took four of us to subdue her. We captured her for you, David replied. All you had to do was transport her back to her room. This is her room, dipshit, the man in scrubs snapped. We brought her here and then she tried to escape again hours later. It took four of us to pin down her location on the premises and get her back in here. David stared at the security guard and the man in scrubs, debating on his next course of action. The symbols on the walls meant something, but he didn't know what, and neither did Scarlett. Not yet, anyway. But his instinct told him they had to be important, possibly related to the secrets of this place. If David threw a fit now about Scarlett's condition, and somehow managed to have the place shut down, he might scare away the ones responsible for whatever was going on here. He glanced down at Scarlett, her bloodied and bruised face reminding him of a peach he dropped on the cement weeks earlier. Everything inside of him screamed not to leave her here, but he knew he would have to if he wanted to save her and the rest of the victims here in the facility. The security guard sneered. "You need to leave. This isn't the place for those right in their minds." The man in scrubs drew close to David. Deep scratches, five of them, ran across the left side of his face. "And you're right in your mind, right? You don't belong here, do you? I mean, if you weren't right in the mind, if someone or a group of someones didn't believe you were in your right mind, it might be their responsibility to make sure you were put under our care." David's hand came down to his pulse pistol, but the security guard shook his head and lifted his pistol. "Many accidents happen here." David stared deep into the man's eyes and knew the man would do something drastic to keep the secrets here safe. "David!" Ridley entered the room as the security guard and the man in scrubs looked at each other and frowned. The guard lowered his weapon as Ridley caught her breath and glanced down at Scarlett. "Is she all right?" David knelt to Scarlett's level and put his hand gently through her hair. "I'm sorry," he whispered. "I have to leave. But I promise, with everything inside of me, that I will be back. I'll find out what's going on in this place, and I'll make sure whoever is responsible is brought to justice." Tears rolled down Scarlett's bloody cheeks. She forced a smile, one filled with a deep ocean of depression. When her blood dripped on David's pants, he fought the urge to wipe it away. Ridley grabbed him by the arm and pulled him to his feet. "We have to go." He took one last look at Scarlett's beaten and bashed form and again fought back the rage that threatened to consume him whole. He and Ridley stepped between the guard and the man in scrubs and left the facility. In the car, on their way back to Lysalis, David simply stared out the window, his mind working out the details of his visit to the Morvane Health Institute. He didn't believe the story the orderly had given him about Scarlett trying to escape again. She wouldn't have tried to leave so quickly after having been caught, and there was no reason to be using barbed wire to restrain her to the chair she was in, nor would it have taken four people to subdue her. She was an ordinary girl, not a trained killer, mixed up in something much bigger and much darker than herself. "What did you find in there, David? I can tell it was upsetting, whatever it was. Did Scarlett do those strange drawings I saw on the walls?" He pulled out his cell phone and began examining the pictures he had taken of Scarlett's scribbles. "There's something going on there, Ridley." "That much is obvious," she said. "Do you think Scarlett is innocent in all of it?" "Yes. She's a victim, and I'm the only one who can help her." Thank you for listening to the LZR Project. If you are interested in reading more of David Alderman's Expired Reality series, please check out thecrossoveralliance.com. And make sure to check out the author's website at davidnalderman.com.